It's KUOW's The Record. I'm Bill Radke. Yesterday, the U.S. Supreme Court unanimously ruled that the Portland band, The Slants, are allowed to trademark their name. The name is widely considered a racist slur against Asians. The band members are Asian American. The government argued that name is too offensive to trademark. The Supreme Court justices did not agree. The bass player for The Slants, Simon Tam, has been pursuing this legal battle over trademarking that name since 2011.
The fact that we can get people on all sides to agree on something was pretty special. It showed how much we value free speech in this country and how important it is to have nuanced discussions of ideas. And I guess that could also be reflected in all the amicus briefs filed as well. We had groups from the far right and left filing together in unison in support of our case. Everyone from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce to the ACLU to the Cato Institute to dozens of social justice groups. So the fact that we had this kind of strong coalition across many different perspectives, I think was really telling. And I'm glad that the Supreme Court decision reflected that.
Help us understand why it would feel like a victory to register what is has been a hurtful racial insult.
Thinking about it as in terms of only offensive language is kind of short-sighted. We need to think about the bigger picture of what it means to protect the First Amendment. And that means oftentimes protecting things we find disagreeable, hateful even. But by doing so, it ensures that our actual civil liberties are protected at the highest possible level. That being said, slant itself is not an inherent racial slur. Our community has never expressed formal outrage over it. It's always been supportive of our name. Countless studies and national surveys have been done on it, all showing a unanimous support for our use of it. So registering it is not an act of offensiveness, rather a celebration of empowerment, the ability for our communities to decide what's best for ourselves without having a random examining attorney at the government make that decision for us.
Simon, I hear that members of your community, fans of your band, are great with the name. I want to tell you about the reaction from my wife, who is the daughter of a Chinese immigrant. She agreed with the Supreme Court, thought it was a First Amendment victory, doesn't dispute your right to use the term, but she's not happy about it, and she doesn't think you've won a moral victory. She thinks calling your band The Slants just in actual effect, enables non-whites to think it's funny or innocent or okay to other an entire group of people. What do you say to that?
Well, I certainly understand that concern, but I've been in this band for over a decade now, and that's never once been the case. People don't feel like they're legitimized in using the term when our band is called that. In fact, what it does is it leads to discussions. We get to actually have interactions about race and racism, sometimes with actual white supremacists. We've been able to make a difference using the name by driving that conversation and bringing attention to false stereotypes. We've been able to actually move the needle on justice rather than to sit and wait for it to happen.
You know, I heard a really interesting objection from a Seattle University professor who opposed you in this case. And he said because you can trademark the name The Slants, you could now block a political movement that wants to use the term in a positive way. Think of the Black is Beautiful movement. Would you stop a movement like that from selling T-shirts, for example, that say, you know, or having a song that it says they're using the term The Slants, they're trying to reappropriate it, but now you own it?
Well, first of all, that's a very limited and inaccurate view of how a trademark law works, because trademark registrations are on very narrow categories of service and products. So by me registering The Slants does not mean I have a monopoly over how slant is used in every single context in the marketplace.
But let's say you're selling T-shirts and they're selling T-shirts, you're doing music, and let's say they've produced a song. That if the cases came commercially very close to each other.
If that were the case, then yeah, because we shouldn't have confusion in the marketplace. It doesn't benefit anybody to have multiple bands calling themselves The Slants, just like it doesn't benefit everybody to have multiple medications all named Tylenol, but that all are doing similar yet different things. What benefits the community is a more nuanced approach. For example, there's the slanted Kings of Comedy Tour. They've had their trademark registration for over 10 years now. It's an Asian American comedian group. I have no problems with them using the term. They have no problems with my band using the term because we're taking different approaches to drive social change.
I know you've heard a lot about a certain Washington professional football team in all of this. Nobody in the management of the Washington Redskins NFL team is arguing that we're reclaiming this racist slur against Native Americans, but now they get their trademark for a racist name for an NFL team. They can make a lot of money. What do you think about the fact that this ruling can help people who they're not viewing racism maybe the way you are?
Well, that's the thing about the First Amendment. It protects opinions, even those that we disagree with. Nothing has changed for them. They've been able to profit off of Native Americans for almost a century now. What it means is now all of a sudden marginalized groups have an opportunity to shift that conversation, to get registered trademarks in expressive ways that convey more important things about political speech. They can make comments about issues that pertain to our communities.
Simon, I've interviewed a local Seattle band called Thunder Pussy. They were waiting for this decision to see if they could trademark their name. How many other artists do you think are out there who are happy with this decision? Have you heard from them?
I've heard from several dozen artists. I think the reality is that it benefits all of the arts. The fact that the government said that trademarks are not government speech, that they're actually private speech and entitled to some form of protection, is pretty substantial for arts across the board. But not only artists and companies, but also nonprofit organizations as well, who actually register trademarks at a pretty high rate in order to protect themselves and that of their donors. The thing is, people keep trying to reframe this conversation around a football team instead of actually looking at the lens of which this case was fought, and that's of marginalized communities. So instead of thinking about how this affects one football team, perhaps we should think about the people who've been fighting for over a decade, not just groups like my band, but civil rights groups like Dykes on Bikes out of San Francisco. I think this allows an opportunity for people to express themselves in any number of ways, and while doing so, celebrating the diversity of ideas that is America.
Simon Tam is the bass player for The Slants, a Portland band that just won a Supreme Court decision to trademark their band's name, which some people consider a racial slur. Now, here's another point of view from a Seattle University law professor. Robert Chang heads the Seattle U Law School's Center for Law and Equality. He helped write an amicus brief against the band. Chang says this Supreme Court ruling opens the door to more racism and segregation.
So as an example, Judge Reyna, in the Federal Circuit opinion in this case, hypothesized about a restaurant, Spick's Not Welcome. And in theory, if that restaurant didn't, in fact, discriminate or turn away Latinos, it wouldn't violate Title II of the Public Accommodations Act. My concern is that although he talked about it as a hypothetical, I see it as actually going on. And an example of that, there are gun stores who have posted signs that say Muslim free zones. And if these signs become federally registered trademarks, then the federal government is going to be then participating in helping to segregate the marketplace. And it's unclear where the limits are. So, for example, you could have a no gays allowed sign. And that to me is deeply concerning.
Could a government prevent a business from having a sign that says, for example, no gays allowed, even though it is registered now under this new ruling?
Well, one thing is that you have to figure out if that business is first covered under Title II of the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And Title II of the 1964 Civil Rights Act was designed to ensure access to public accommodations for places like restaurants, places of entertainment, and hotels. And so the first thing is this a business that's actually covered by that law? And then if it is covered by that law, you know, what do you do with pure speech? And I guess that's my concern, that this enables somebody or a business to engage in speech where the government can't regulate it.
For example, couldn't a business be allowed to trademark a phrase like no gays allowed, spicks not welcome, your examples. So, yeah, you can sell T-shirts and profit from that, but you still can't put that sign above your place of public accommodation. Couldn't that still be preserved?
It's an uncertain question now, and I think that's the danger of this opinion.
The court essentially ruled that it's not the government's place to be deciding whether something is too offensive to have a trademark registration. What do you say to that argument, to keep the government out of a decision like that?
One example of where the government clearly makes decisions about terms that are thought to be racially disparaging involves maps. There is this U.S. Board of Geographic Place Names, and also there are usually state analogs. Washington has one of those. And they make determinations that even though they're supposed to, on their maps, use the name that is locally used, so they're supposed to go by local usage, they actually override those. In the 1960s, they said that you can't use the N-word in place names. And an example of that in Washington State involves Coon Lake. And there's actually a long struggle in Washington State to get the U.S. Forest Services to change the signs and to change the designations. And so they made a determination. Coon Lake was offensive. It's not going to be used on the maps. For me, I think that the determination with regard to the Federal Registry for trademarks is very similar to that.
How would the government go about deciding whether a term is offensive, empowering, kind of offensive, but not that offensive, used to be offensive, but not anymore? How is the government supposed to do that?
That's a great question. I think that the government can do fact-finding. They can, you know, include things like surveys of populations, of groups, to figure out where to draw the line on certain things. I admit that there are some problems with regard to line drawing, but at the same time, I think that the better course is to figure out a better process rather than taking out the law.
So in the case of this Portland rock band, the government would survey some representative, some large sample of Asian Americans and ask, is the slants, is that offensive to you?
I think that could be part of the process.
One of the members of this Portland band, Simon Tam, says that when he grew up, the notion of having slanted eyes was considered a negative thing. Kids would pull their eyes back in a slant-eyed gesture. And Simon says, I wanted to change it to something that was powerful, something that was considered beautiful, or a point of pride instead. Do you think that being able to trademark that name is a victory for him reclaiming that name into a point of pride?
It's uncertain to me that it's a victory because the odd thing about granting him a trademark is that it gives him monopoly power. So in terms of the political project of reappropriation, it's most effective if everybody is free to fill that term with positive content. If he's granted a trademark, he's actually given monopoly power. And so, for example, if I started to try to engage in a political project around the term slant, he could decide that I was infringing upon his trademark, and he could limit the way then that I do that. So in terms of the political project, for me, it's odd that it's necessary, and in some ways it works against the political project to have monopoly power. We used examples before about that. And so let's imagine that, like Black is Beautiful or Queer and Proud, Proud and Queer. If somebody trademarks that and their political project is to reappropriate the term, then it prevents other people from engaging in that political project without their permission. So somebody could always go in and say, oh, you can't do that. And to me, that really cuts against trying to change the way that people use terms.
Law professor Robert Chang is executive director at the Fred T. Korematsu Center for Law and Equality at the Seattle University School of Law. The Seattle band Thunder Pussy was hoping the slants would win this case, as they did. Thunder Pussy wants to trademark their name as well. So we're tweeting out a link now to our interview with two members of that band. You can join us on Twitter at KUOW.